Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Media Network, a weekly review of what's happening in the international communications business, hosted by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Ah, there you are. And the events in southeastern Europe have changed the lineup of our programme this week, but we'll be making time to look at your letters.
By the way, don't forget that with summertime starting in Europe this weekend, many stations, including Radio Netherlands, will be making seasonal time and frequency changes. And those transmissions that are affected are carrying special announcements 3 minutes before they sign on.
But first, Andy Sennett of Radio Netherlands' Interactive Department has been monitoring the media situation in Serbia and Kosovo. And he's joining us now. Andy, first of all, how are the Albanians still living in Kosovo getting unbiased information?
Well, they're not getting it from Belgrade, that's for sure. Prior to the breakup of the Yugoslav Federation, the government station in Pristina, in the south of the country, had an entire network in the Albanian language. But this part of Radio Pristina was closed by the authorities, who were concerned that it would be used to promote separatism. Most of the Albanian-speaking broadcasters were fired, and the remaining news broadcasts in Albanian are merely translations of material prepared in Belgrade. So the broadcasts only reflect the official government line.
But Andy, there is some private broadcasting in Kosovo.
Yes, there is, and one station in Pristina called Radio 21 can be heard outside the region thanks to relays on the web and via satellite. In fact, satellite dishes are quite popular in Kosovo, so Radio 21 uses a satellite subcarrier, which gives them access to the area because their application for an FM licence hasn't been granted. But if you go to their website at www.radio21.net, you can hear their reports in both Albanian and English.
Welcome to Radio 21.
Last night at about 6:45 p.m., nearby the Green Market in Pristina, unidentified persons shot with a submachine gun towards Medin Bektesi 30 from the suburb of Matisani. Medin was shot on his leg and his hand.
It's curious that this station is not interested in reaching the rest of the Serbian-speaking population to the north. One of the journalists at Radio 21, Eugene Saracini, explained to Radio Netherlands reporter François Loreis that they've moved their internet activities to the States to prevent interference by the local authorities.
Not only in internet, but also in radio, which is going on through the satellite, because our website is United States. They will be, I believe, very, very happy if they can do something against us. But the only possibility for them is to come to close up our space, to take our equipment. But until now, we were spared from the direct repression.
In Serbia, though, as the crisis came to a head, the government's been very keen to silence any independent broadcasting activities.
Early on Wednesday morning, the popular B92 station in Belgrade was raided by the authorities. Sasha Mirkovic is general manager of B92, and on Wednesday afternoon he explained to Radio Netherlands Newsline why their FM transmitter was silenced.
Police dropped into our radio. Around 10 policemen, together with the 2 inspectors from the Federal Ministry for Telecommunication, with the decision from the Federal Ministry that B92 is using transmitter with more power than the license that we are having as a local station, so more than 300 watts. And policemen were looking for our transmitter. They found it on the roof of a building where we are. During their intervention, our editor-in-chief, Mr. Veran Matic, was arrested by the police. He was just released 1 hour ago. So we are now still out of the air, but we are broadcasting program non-stop. We are on the internet and we are sending our signal through the ISDN line to London, and from London it's going through BBC satellites to the local radio stations in Serbia and Montenegro. There is a danger, they could cut ISDN line, then we can use satellite telephone, etc. But I'm thinking that government probably will wait to see what will be the new development of actual situation.
Unlike most of the other media in Belgrade, B92 is an independent station, which has often been critical of the government. And this isn't the first time the authorities have tried to silence it. They get some of their funds from advertising, but pressure groups such as Press Now and Holland have also helped to keep the funding going to run B92.
The station can't be heard on shortwave, but the real audio feeds on the internet are from a server in Amsterdam. Most of the programmes are in Serbian, but there are English news segments sponsored by a British chocolate company.
Radio B92. English. English.
In today's news, Richard Holbrooke breaks off talks with Milosevic, and Milosevic calls for a renegotiation of the political agreement on Kosovo. U.S. Envoy Richard Holbrooke left the residence of Yugoslav President Slobodan.
That's from their website at www.b92.net. And so it continues. Andy, what about the Serbian government-controlled radio?
Well, in this part of northwest Europe, you can hear the domestic relay of Radio Belgrade on 7200 kHz, 7200. Yesterday, for much of the day, the regular programmes had been suspended, with news bulletins on the hour.
Radio Beograd, prvi program.
And then, of course, there's the external service, Radio Yugoslavia, which is so far operating normally on shortwave. In fact, most of the powerful transmitters for the external service are in Bosnia, not Serbia. That's because they were constructed before the breakup of the Federal Republic. If Radio Yugoslavia were to lose this facility, they could also fall back on their real audio transmissions on the web.
This is Radio Yugoslavia broadcasting to Europe, Africa and North America on 6100, 6185, 6195, 7115, 7130 and 9720 kHz. Hello and welcome from our studios in Belgrade.
Radio Yugoslavia is firmly under the control of the Milosevic government. Radio Tirana in Albania is one other source of news and opinion. They've always been critical of the Serbian authorities in Kosovo, and nothing has changed by the sound of their broadcasts. Radio Tirana has 4 short English broadcasts today, but no real audio.
Our Real Radio e-zine on Radio Netherlands' website has more background to the media in this troubled region. You'll find the link on the left-hand side of our homepage, which is at www.rnw.nl.
And this seems to be one of the world's first multimedia conflicts. Now to Alaska, where in a matter of hours' time, a giant US Department of Defense facility will do a shortwave test for those who want to get up on Saturday morning to listen out for some Morse code.
For on a military base near Gakona, Alaska, the US Navy and Air Force has built a huge research facility to look into the properties of the ionosphere. The scientists argue that if they can understand in more detail the way the ionosphere works, they should be able to enhance communications and radar systems for both civilian and defence purposes. One of the main prominent parts of the programme is an ionospheric research instrument, which is gradually being constructed up there in the frozen north.
The antenna system for this instrument is quite large, covering some 33 acres of land. A total of 180 short towers are being built, each of which supports a crossed dipole antenna. 360 10-kilowatt transmitters are carefully coupled together, and that means that scientists are able to make a narrow beam of energy and point it vertically at the ionosphere.
Some of the 3.6 megawatts of energy is absorbed as it spreads out on its way up, but some of it will interact with the ionosphere. 2 years ago, when the facility was only partially complete, some environmental organisations predicted that HAARP would punch a hole in the ionosphere. An on-air test with Morse code revealed that shortwave listeners in the US and Europe were only just able to hear the facility when it tested for the first time.
And that time, the government scientists were open to questions from the public. They set up an extensive website, which contains questions and official answers to what exactly is going on. That includes details of this weekend's new round of tests. The website goes into great detail about the impact of the site on the environment, but it doesn't say much as to who is using the data or why. It does offer a phone number for you to call to register any interference comments you believe may be related to the HARP facility.
Thank you for calling the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program site in Gakona, Alaska. The HARP Ionospheric Research Instrument prototype has been completed, and periodically we conduct tests to evaluate its performance. Whenever the high-frequency transmitters are operating, someone here at the site will answer your call. If you wish, you may leave a message after the tone.
Please wait.
A whole series of tones, in fact. In 1997, HARP was happy to conduct an interview with us. This year, the atmosphere is not so cooperative. Our official request, submitted weeks ago, is still being processed by US government officials. Foreign media requests are apparently treated with some apprehension, and repeated calls are not returned. This doesn't do much to clear the mystery surrounding the site, despite the extensive efforts of the webmaster. There's even a live webcam, in fact, to show the antenna site.
The sinister, sensationalist reporting on HARP has long since died down, especially after the first publicly announced on-air test. Only Marconi's experiments got more publicity than the HARP radio tests of 1997. But we'll keep our interview request open and see what happens.
In the meantime, the upcoming HARP test is on March the 26th at 08 hours UTC, when the scientists will fire up the facility on 6990 kHz, or thereabouts, with Morse code, followed by several carrier-only tests, and then from 0820 UTC, the experiment will be repeated on 3390 kHz, 3390. Then the whole 30-minute sequence will be repeated on Saturday, March the 27th at 07 hours.
Reception reports will only be accepted by post. The address is HARP, P.O. Box 271, Gakona, Alaska, 99586 in the USA.
Now it's time to dip into the mailbag in a letter from Harry Matthews of Colchester in the UK. He says it's time we looked at the influence radio has had on the movies again. He remembers our motion picture musings around a decade ago in which we took clips from feature films with apparent references to shortwave radio. Well, in the latest Jim Carrey film called The Truman Show, the hero's living inside a giant television studio complex without realizing it. We hear several familiar shortwave sounds as his car radio suddenly malfunctions. And Truman's opening line in the movie is very reminiscent of the way Radio Netherlands used to open its broadcasts in the days when you called the station Radio Nederland.
Good morning!
Morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Yeah.
So, there you have it. Perfect proof that scriptwriters have turned to international radio for inspiration once again. At least, that's the story we're telling at parties.
Yes, indeed. We used to say something like that. In the days we called ourselves the Dutch World Broadcasting System. Victor Gunatilaka remembers those days too. He's been our faithful monitor in Colombo, Sri Lanka for several decades.
He's also been watching the very gradual construction of a giant shortwave transmitting station on the island. Victor, we've been talking about this Voice of America facility for ages on the programme. You've come back a few minutes ago from a trip out to the site.
Well, Jonathan, we've gone to Iranavila, the VOA's relay station, up about 100 kilometres north of Colombo.
And what did you find there? Because this station isn't yet on the air.
Yes, it's not on the air, but it's just about to, you know, waiting to come up on the air. It's a beautiful station, and the 16 curtain antennas just by the sea. It's a beautiful sight to look at. and the station is waiting to go on the air the moment the contractors, Marconi Electronics, hands over the station to the IBB, Jonathan, the International Broadcasting Bureau, that's the parent body of the Voice of America.
So what is it, a couple of weeks away?
The Marconi Electronics is supposed to hand over everything by late June or early July, and then the Voice of America will conduct formal test transmissions, and regular broadcasts are expected in late September or October.
Now, the IBB has also been quite innovative when it comes to overseas monitoring as well, because they've set up computers and remote-controlled receivers so they can hear how signals are coming through in different parts of the world. There's been a development there too.
Yes, a very interesting development is that these remote receivers are being now used to pick up news broadcasts from various parts of the world. And these news broadcasts, as a news gathering service, is made available to clients by the International Broadcasting Bureau, that's the Voice of America's parent body. For instance, DXers can also listen to news broadcasts gathered by these remote receivers. For instance, the Kathmandu remote receiver can give you a news broadcast daily from Radio Nepal and also from Bhutan. So it's really exotic. And if one goes into the IBB's homepage, you can click on the news broadcast that you like and receive real stereo quality in some instances.
But supposing you don't have a computer, you just have a radio, what do you suggest we listen to at the moment?
One interesting thing you can listen on that computer is Bhutan on 5030, which, of course, if you have a good receiver, you can tune it yourself on shortwave on 5030 kilohertz, and the English news is at 1315 UTC.
Thanks, Victor. And the web address for more information about the IBB monitoring system is simply voa.his.com. That's voa.his.com. There's no www in front of that address.
Victor also had a guest staying with him. Anka Pedersen of the Danish Shortwave Clubs International has been doing some serious listening at Victor's shack and having a good time by the sound of it.
Yes, I have been listening quite a lot to many stations which are difficult to get back there in Denmark. That is, of course, mainly stations from the sub-Indian continent and Southeast Asia.
Can you give us some examples?
Regional stations in Vietnam and Laos, for instance, Cao Bang in Vietnam, which I heard on 6495.5 kilohertz. And from Laos, I've heard Hua Pan on 4682.7, which also is a little variation from 4685.
Do many of these stations send out QSL cards to listeners, or is that just a hopeless case?
I think it's more or less hopeless to get QSL from most of these, at least these regional ones. You may be able to get it from Bhutan because they broadcast in English, but the small ones in Vietnam and Laos and Indonesia are very difficult to get these days.
So apart from the good weather, it's also been good listening?
Oh, yeah, it has been excellent. I have also been able to update my tropical band survey, which is due to get out by the 1st of May in a new edition.
And we'll review that on the program when it's published.
Media Network. Part of the web and part of your week. Every week here on Radio Netherlands.
On March 11th, we made a comment about portable digital audio players and how a number of companies were coming out with their version of the handheld solid-state Walkman.
Creative Technologies Limited has become the latest to enter the exploding universe of MP3 digital audio with a new line of portable digital audio players. Creative has so far made its audio mark on the digital world with its Soundblaster audio products. They say their new Project Nomad players will use proprietary technology to make next-generation, compact, affordable players. That's what they say. The devices will be able to download content directly from the internet or to record it from an existing CD collection.
But a spokesperson for Creative told Media Network the aim is to give the music downloading business an important shot in the arm. As well as a player, Creative intends on driving the strategy associated with the creation, playback and distribution of digital audio content via the internet.
We'll keep an eye on that. In the meantime, Harold Kuhl in Germany has this comment.
I'm also very fascinated by the possibilities systems like MP3 or the new MPEG-4 might offer for taking audio files around with you. I note that a little mistake often made when talking about MP3 is confusing it with MPEG-3. MP3 stands for MPEG Layer 3 and is defined for the audio parts of MPEG-1 and MPEG-2. According to the Fraunhofer Institute, who are the pioneers in this field, MPEG-3 has never been defined. That's because the developers in Germany have already released MPEG-4. At the moment, one of the main problems of the portable operating systems is the power consumption. At least that's the case with Windows Compact Edition. By the way, later this year I'll be in Shanghai again visiting with my wife. On that occasion, I'll try to do some additional research concerning broadcasting there during the 1920s through the 1940s. Hopefully it might also be possible to visit the place where Mao operated his clandestine broadcasting station on that occasion. It was located in a quite remote part of China, and getting there today is still quite an adventure.
Thanks, Harold, and we're looking forward to your input from China later this year. And taking up your point about the Windows CE system for portables, it's worth looking at what's happening with the phone industry at the moment. If people like Nokia and Ericsson are to be believed, then the future is not GSM, but WAP, which stands for Wireless Application Protocol. There are currently just over 180 million mobile phone subscribers in the world, and the numbers are growing at rates that are mind-boggling, more, in fact, than the growth of the World Wide Web. A couple of companies are boldly projecting the mobile phone market will grow to 500 million subscribers over the next 2 years.
The giant IT exhibition CeBIT ended in Hanover, Germany, a few days ago. Many of the premieres, though, had already been given away at the GSM Mobile Conference in Cannes in the south of France at the end of last month. Although the general market for voice is expected to grow, phones with an enlarged display that allow you to check your email, news headlines and websites are expected to steal the spotlight. But the phone companies quickly admit that the current speed of the GSM telephone network is abysmally slow, slower even than a 14.4K modem at best of times.
And that's the point. Bandwidth is very important. That's why high-level talks are taking place in Geneva and Brazil at the moment to thrash out an acceptable compromise on the standard for the third generation of mobile phones around the world. The International Telecommunication Union hopes that if this can be resolved this year, more bandwidth will become available for handheld devices within a few years. And developing countries are expected to benefit too, as well as the West, because such wireless communication systems are much cheaper to implement than digging up cities to lay new telephone cables. The downside, though, seems to be a forest of GSM-like transmitting antennas sprouting up in cities around the globe.
Even though one Dutch provider has come up with a novel idea of camouflaging the transmitter mask to make it look more like a tree. But in most cases, lucrative income from renting out roof space to mobile phone companies has made many building owners turn a blind eye to underlying questions of health and safety. And this is certainly a story to be continued, and one we will follow up in a future edition of Media Network. Now to a letter from Perry van der Velde, who writes from Maastricht in Limburg. And Maastricht is a city in the south of the Netherlands.
I listen to Radio Netherlands on the satellite and also via the web if I happen to miss a broadcast. You mentioned the close of Germany's digital satellite radio in January of this year. A friend of mine bought such a receiver from Grundig just 2 years ago, and now it's a heap of junk sitting in his bedroom. I'm curious about another digital radio system which looks like it's heading in the same direction. I note that Astra's website is playing down its so-called Astra digital radio system, which was hailed a couple of years ago as the worthy successor to listening to analog subcarriers. You need a special ADR receiver. If I look at the list of the stations up there, well, I guess ADR should really stand for Astra's Deutsche Sprachradio. In other words, it's almost exclusively marketed at the German-speaking world. I can't help feeling it's doomed.
Well, Perry, it would appear that satellite specialist Christian Maas agrees with you. He writes for the Telesatellite magazine and notes that his mailbox is full of questions about the free-to-air television services, but very little interest is being expressed in ADR.
At the moment, it's strange. People sometimes don't know what to buy. ADR from Germany, which is a digital system, but it's nearly on the way to die because it's much cheaper to put this radio station inside the digital packages. So people who spend money on such an ADR receiver, maybe in 1 year, he will be sorry about spending so much money.
Time will tell how much effort Astra will put into marketing a proprietary radio system in an age of open standards. But we'll see.
As far as satellite television is concerned, SES, the operator of Astra, one of Europe's largest direct-to-home satellite systems, says in its annual report that the dish market's doing very well, at least as far as they're concerned. Revenues for 1998 were up by 15% to around $517 million. And Astra claim their audience in Europe is now 74 million homes, a rise of 5.7%.
Most of the extra revenue came as a result of the start of commercial services on the 7th and 8th satellite in the Astra fleet. But wait, there's more news about pay radio. The satellite newsletter reports that Extra Music, which took over from the ill-fated pay radio service DMX Europe, has finally set up a special offer for former DMX subscribers, which is in fact a very exclusive offer indeed. Customers will not only have to buy new reception equipment, but also pay monthly fees that are more than three times that of the old DMX Europe.
In effect, the monthly subscription fee will be around £24 sterling if you choose to pay 1 year in advance. Plus, there's a connection fee of around £18. Then you need some sort of tuner. A Philips DVB receiver is part of the package at a mere £278, as well as a conditional access module for an additional £52, all this excluding value-added tax and freight.
So if you add all this up, a former DMX Europe subscriber will have to pay almost 2,000 guilders, and that's equivalent to $1,000 US, for the first 12 months, after which the special offer comes to an end. Now, these sort of prices might appeal to clubs and pubs that need a continuous music service. But for the individual, used to switching on the standard radio for free, the prices look way above what the market will accept. Some number crunching now, but interesting figures if you're in the broadcasting business. Each year, the Dutch domestic broadcasting service NOS does research into how Dutch citizens use the radio. 10,000 people were sent a questionnaire and about half responded to the last survey. The results have just come out, in which it appears 97% of the population claims to have one or more radio receivers in their possession. The average is around three.
Not surprisingly, the bedroom and the living room seem to be the most popular places for radio listening, a fact that has changed little in the last few years. 13% of households report radios in the kitchen, 20% in the study or hobby room, and 80% say they have a radio in the car, of which one in three is now equipped with a radio data system for easier tuning. That's quite a high figure. Just less than 25% claim to listen to medium wave radio. The remaining 75% listen daily to FM.
Compared to a study 5 years ago, it appears that AM is slowly losing its popularity, although much slower than was first expected. The listening habits are slightly complicated by the fact that more than 80% of Dutch households have connected at least one radio to the cable system, and this usually offers stations normally heard on medium wave in FM stereo quality. Despite that, though, both commercial and public broadcasters want to be heard over the air and not just confined to the cable systems. But anyway, that's the time where we say goodbye for this month of March.
But we'll have a new edition of the show in 7 days. Goodbye for now.
Media Network is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Copyright 1999. All rights reserved.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.